This is Ross Owen.
Virus database has been updated.
This is Ross Owen. They really know their shite.
Why, this is bigger than the Whispering Steeple in Kansas City.
And it's decidedly average to be here. This is Ross Owen.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
7 years of college down the drain.
This is Ross Owen.
Great Scott! What the devil are they doing?
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
You're looking kind of lonely, girl. Would you like someone new to talk to? Oh, yeah, all right. I'm feeling kind of lonely too, if you don't mind. Can I sit down here beside you? Oh, yeah, all right. If I seem to come on too strong, I hope that you will understand. I say these things 'cause I'd like to know if you're as lonely as I am, and if you'd mind sharing the night together, oh, yeah. Sharing the night together, oh, yeah. Sharing the night. We could bring in the morning, girl, if you wanna go that far. And if tomorrow finds us together right here, the way we are, would you mind sharing the night together? Ooh, yeah. Sharing the night together. Ooh, yeah. Sharing the night. Would you like to dance with me and hold me? You know I wanna be holding you. Oh, yeah. Alright. 'Cause I like feeling like I do when I see. Eyes, if you're liking it, I'm liking it too. Oh yeah, alright. Like to get to know you better. Is there a place where we can go, where we can be alone together and turn the lights down low and start sharing the night together?
Ross, are you back?
Yeah, I pressed the wrong button, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so...
I was just telling about the legendary frontman, Dennis LeCourrier. That's who we're going to be talking to as soon as Ross makes it, the connection.
It's coming up all different.
You know, you Scottish guys got weird computers.
Okay, I'm just going to dial the number. Skype's changed. It's different.
This is awesome. This is how long it takes to dial a phone with a computer and a mouse.
The number you have dialed is not a working number. Please.
Oh. Because you got to move the mouse instead of your finger, and it's harder.
Nightmare. This is ridiculous.
I know.
Can you play a song just now, and we'll come back with Dennis and after the song?
Absolutely. I got some more Dr. Hook lined up, ready to go. Here's a little Dr. Hook, only 16. Don't go anywhere, kids. We'll be right back with legendary frontman Dennis LeCourrier.
Only 16, but I loved her so. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. We'd laugh and we'd sing and do funny things, and it made our hearts glow. But she was too young to fall in love,
was too young to know. So why did I give my heart so fast? It never will happen again. But I was a mere child of 16. I've aged a year since then. She was only 16. Only 16. Ooh, with eyes that would glow. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. She was only 16, only 16. Ooh, but I loved that girl so. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. Yes, she was too young to fall in love, and I was too. I was much too young to know.
Dr. Hook, only 16, and we are now fully connected with legendary frontman of Dr. Hook, Mr. Dennis LeCourrier, on the Ross Owen Show. Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, you know something, man? It was a little bit like, you know that that film, The Martian?
Because yeah.
I could hear you guys talking about me, and I wanted you to know that I was alive. You know what I mean? And I wasn't really sure how to get that across. And, you know, I DM'd and, you know, gave you a direct message on Twitter, because I have been drag kicking and screaming into the modern age. And but it really was. It was like, it was very frustrating for a minute. But then I heard you say, you know, okay, we're calling you now. And I thought, oh, I could actually get dressed. I didn't know where you were calling me from. I didn't know if you weren't calling me from Scotland. I have no idea. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
you got busloads of people going to the gig. So, I mean, you know, I figured you might be in the vicinity.
We were just talking about that, actually. 50 of us coming to see you in Glasgow. And it's going to be a great night. We were lucky to get those tickets. I mean, we got them pretty early on, and it was almost sold out then. I think,
man,
we got almost the last 50 tickets.
It's amazing, you know, because if you just keep breathing in and out, and you do what you do, you know, and you keep an eye on, you know, the future, but you kind of live today and stuff comes around. And I could tell in like 2014 when I helped Universal put together that Timeless album, like it's a double disc collection of Hook. And, you know, I've always felt like I was the guy in Dr. Hook, even when Hook was over. I mean, that's always felt like, you know, that's been my general calling card, but I was living outside of it. And I had to listen to all that material to put that compilation together. And I kind of got out on the inside of it again. And as I was sequencing the albums, I thought, wow, this might make a good show. And when the album came out, it went top 10, and we went to New Zealand, and we went to Australia, and the album came out, and it also went top 10, and I think top 20, and, you know, this is stuff that was released for the, you know, the earliest of it, like 40 years ago, and it tells you something, you know, it tells you something. And I'll tell you another thing, man, I'm no longer in competition with myself, because you wind up being in competition with yourself. Your present self winds up being in competition with the guy everybody used to know. And it gets kind of sad for a little while when you're walking around thinking, well, I wonder if I'm enough like him. You know, it really does. It gets kind of and you know, I'm not trying to be too dramatic about it, but that's why I kind of distanced myself from it, because I didn't want to wind up resenting it. But, you know, when people were saying to me at 35, oh, I remember you, I'd walk away and I'd check my pulse, I'd check my reflection in the mirror to make sure I was still here. And now, you know, you do the Hook tour and people are thrilled to be back and listening to the stuff, man. And it's great. It's nice to carry that around, you know.
Well, I mean, just looking at the shows in the UK, sold out, sold out, sold out. But you can get all the dates and information on the website.
I mean, there's a bunch of them that are sold out. There are a bunch that are, you know, last few remaining tickets. And, you know, and these are all early in the tour. And so that bodes well, man. And it's just nice, man. It really is nice. And, you know, I'm dying for people to hear the band, because the way we're playing this stuff is the way people remember it, you know? I've said this before, but I can't think of a better way to say it. If I had numerous ways that I thought were as reflective, but the music now, I can tell from what people say to me and how they speak to me about how it's in their lives and stuff.
Sure.
Because it's in my life a whole other way, you know what I mean? Guy said to me about that, one of the love songs that I'd written, he said, you know, every time I have a new love or I got married again, I brought that song with me. And I thought, well, yeah, you can do that, but what if I wrote it for somebody I don't like anymore? You know what I mean? My relationship to it is a little bit different, you know?
Has that happened to you? Is there a song that you maybe wrote for a certain person that you maybe it went tits up and you don't talk to anymore? Is it awkward for you at all singing that song at times?
You know something? No, not really. I mean, yeah, there are things that I've written specifically for people, but I'm lucky that people take them to heart. And then I realize that it's not such a self thing going on. That's one of the nice things about writing songs that matter to you, as opposed to just trying to write something for a hit, something that matters to you, because that stays with you. And and later on, when people take it and adapt it to their own lives, you go, oh, okay, this is way beyond me now. That's the kind of nice thing, is all of a sudden you go, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not alone on this, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, no, that's cool, man. It's really great. But what I was going to say is we're playing this music the way people remember it. I mean, it's a sense memory. It's like smelling chicken soup and remembering your mom's house, and you know what I mean? So I just told the band, we have to use mom's recipe. We have to play this stuff the way people remember it. I mean, you know, because I haven't been right immersed in the middle of it, so I'm not totally bored with it. I've been touring alone, playing a hit, just up there yourself with a guitar. You're playing a song.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You find out if that hit is actually a good song when you play it by yourself, you know. But now we're playing these things and I'm singing Sylvia's Mother and all the harmonies come in. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I realize how much I've taken on to myself in the last 10 years, trying to do
incredible.
It all alone. But I was an only child, man. I was an only child. So, you know, when it all goes tits up, I usually just go, yeah, yeah, I got it. You know what I mean? So, but no, it's cool, man. It's nice that it comes back around. And I'm a relatively young guy. And, you know, the reason I say relatively is because I'm 67, and I really did not think 67 was going to be like this when I was a younger man.
When you say that, it's just so difficult to comprehend, because you I'm not saying you looked older when you were younger, but you haven't really changed much.
Luck of the draw. It really is. You know, it really is. That's another reason I think, you know, if the Hook thing's going to happen and, you know, I was the lead singer, so I should go out and do this now. It, you know, it doesn't hurt me to know that when I walk on stage, everybody isn't going to look at each other and go, "Who the hell is this?" You know. So that's a little bit in my favor. It adds to my confidence a little bit. But it really is luck of the draw, man. I got no secrets. You know what I mean? I don't rub anything on my face. You know what I mean? I'm struggling right now to keep going to the gym because, you know, I got 32 shows coming up, and that you need a lot of stamina to do. You know, I always tell people, if you want to really know how old you are, be doing at 67 what you were doing at 27, and you'll know exactly where you had to adjust.
The original band, the original lineup, these were very theatrical, I think was the word when I was talking to Nightmare about this. You know, and do you try and capture some of that atmosphere, the old hook, with the new show?
Well, you know, man, to tell you the truth, what really sustains it all now is the music and the songs. You know what I mean? I mean, four of the guys in the band are gone, deceased. Oh, you know what I mean? Can't bring them back. I mean, so, yeah, John is gone, the drummer. Jance is gone, the bass player. Rod,
yeah, remember
the guitar
Jance.
Player in the band. Billy Francis, the keyboard player.
Oh,
and
my.
These guys were iconic to Dr. Hook. So when I say I'm bringing back Dr. Hook, man, we're not having a seance. You know what I mean? I mean, what I mean is we're going to play these songs. And you know, I'm the guy that goes, well, you know, I don't know how big I am on nostalgia, and is this credible? But the truth of the matter is that the baby boomer generation is not going to let go. Okay, one of the reasons we were all so astounded that so many people died this year is not because they of their age, but it's because they danced right to the precipice. It's not like old stars who used to disappear when they were 40 and then you'd see some blurry photograph of them when they were 60-something with sunglasses and a babushka on shopping and then one day they'd be dead.
Yeah.
Now, you know, 67 is Bruce Springsteen leaping off an amp for 4 hours. We've kind of changed what it is, you know what I mean? That's why I said to you, I never thought 67 would be like it is. I really thought, you know, I mean, geez, when I was a kid, I talk about my grandfather as a little old Italian man, and he, the period I'm seeing in my head, he was probably 12 years younger than I am right now.
Yeah.
But people seem to get older.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to just go, okay, yeah, that's over. But it's this damn baby boomer generation, man. We are not going to let go of it. And, you know, I think right now, if I can recreate the music, I mean, I'm not trying to do old Dr. Hook bits, because to tell you the truth, man, that was all born of spontaneity and who the people were. You know what I mean? It's the music now that I'm trying to deal with. And there's humor. I mean, you know, I'll say stupid things, you know what I mean? And people, I think, can always count on there being, you know, chat and humor, because I'm not the guy who's just going to stand there and, you know, go through the hits. But I have to say, looking around at me, I mean at everything around me, and seeing the audiences and what they want to see, and seeing that ELO is indeed Jeff Lynne, and people on stage with him. 10cc is Graham Goldman, and people on stage with him. And it's a shame that they're not all there, and it's a shame that we don't all live forever. But the point of the matter is, you know, if you got Queen without Freddie Mercury, I feel kind of okay about going out and doing Dr. Hook.
Well, that's exactly, you know what, I went to see the Drifters and the Searchers, and none of the original lineup were in the band. So to me, that wasn't the Drifters, and it wasn't the Searchers. If the singer was there, you know, then fine, I'll take that.
You know something, I got to tell you, man, I'm happy to hear you say that, because if I say that stuff, it sounds like, well, of course, you were the singer. But the truth of the matter is, for me, not because I'm a singer, I could be a brick layer, I could be anything, okay? The way I look at it is, Creedence Clearwater Revival is John Fogerty and any band he puts together.
Yeah.
Not not the bass player and the drummer and any singer they hire. I get it. Everybody wants to make a living. But, you know, I've been here a long time to not have an opinion. And my opinion probably kept me from doing it for a while, okay? And probably kept me from doing it for a while because I thought, well, you know, Dr. Hook was a specific thing. But, I mean, everything is a specific thing. Look at your driver's license. Remember what you used to look like, you know? Everything was a specific thing. And right now, all I can do is go out there with as much, you know, talent and good humor as I can and deliver these songs that I know people want to hear. And quite honestly, fellas, that makes my life easier because I already know that I'm walking, you know, for 10 years I would write songs and go out and say, hey, do you like this? And if they liked it, I would put it on my solo album. Now I know they like it. You know, and that's, it's kind of unusual. I can't say it's as dangerous.
Yeah,
but it certainly is nice to know at this point in my life that, hey, it's either this or I could be in a new band, a new young band, trying to come up with a name for the group. I don't think I'd want to be there, so better be on this end of it.
Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's busy, too busy to come to the phone. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's trying to start a new life of her own. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's happy, so why don't you leave her alone? And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, please. Mrs. Avery, I just gotta talk to her. I'll only keep her a while. Says Sylvia's packing, she's gone, be leaving today. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's marrying a fella down Galveston way. Sylvia's mother says, please don't say nothing to make us start crying and stay. And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, please. Mrs. Avery, I just gotta talk to her. I'll only keep her a while. Says Sylvia's hurrying, she's catching the 9 o'clock train. Sylvia's mother says, take your umbrella, 'cause Sylvia, it's starting to rain. And Sylvia's mother says, thank you for calling, and sir, won't you call back again? And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, please. Mrs. Avery, I just gotta talk to her. I'll only keep her a while.
Goodbye.
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
Black Sky Radio.
I think it's fantastic what you got going on, Dennis. It's absolutely beautiful. I just want to know when you're coming to America.
You know, man, people say this all the time, and it almost, they almost once in a while, people get a little uppity with me as if I've abandoned America. I mean, America, even when I was with Dr. Hook, okay, when we would tour internationally, we would come here in the UK, where I am, where I live, and we would do a UK tour. And we'd go everywhere. We'd go over to Ireland, and then we could go and do a Scandinavian tour. And we can go into Europe and do and it was all on the ground. You were all doing this stuff. You flew once in a while, but you were doing these shows. And then you could go to Australia and make the long trip, but you would do a lot of shows. You do 30 shows in Australia because there's plenty of cities. And then you'd hop over and you'd do New Zealand. But when we were in America, we never did an American tour. America was like all those countries combined. We would do the East Coast. We would play the, you know, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia. We'd play. Then we'd go out and do a bunch of gigs in Texas. And we would do a bunch of gigs in California. And then we'd be up in Montana. And we'd be up in, you know, Greenland and Newfoundland and all around the North American continent. But every time we were somewhere, nobody else knew we were there. You know, it's all very regional. And I say this all the time, and it's, again, it's the best way I can think of putting it. To be a national success in America, you have to set yourself on fire in New York and hope somebody smells the smoke in Los Angeles, you know? And it's tough, man. That's a big fire, and it gets bigger all the time because people are killing each other to get around that fire. And, you know, so what I'm saying, the people who tour America are the stadium bands who go and they do 11 shows across America and play to 2 million people. If you're a journeyman singer-songwriter, or if you're a band of any kind of moderate strata, you've got to get everywhere, man. And, you know, you can't. I mean, people say to me, you play America, I'll be the first one there. And I think to myself, really? If we play in Montana and you live in New Jersey, you're going to show up? You know, so my answer, the long answer to you saying, when are you going to come to America, as soon as we can make some of it make sense.
Okay, so never?
Well, I hope that's not the case. No, because, you know, now that you've said that, if I was waiting for my life to make sense, I'd still be sucking my thumb.
Exactly. You know? And that's the thing is, right now in America, nothing is making sense. It is a ridiculous place to be, and I am just watching it, trying to learn how to play the violin because I figure I can be Nero when this bitch burns.
It's like that everywhere. And, you know, the perspective of watching it from over here and everything, and it really is. I mean, it really is. It's a shame. It's a shame, but it really is, has more to do with, like, pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Than it does politics. And, you know, when I heard Donald Trump say to a crowd of 18,000 people when they were all beating each other up, isn't this fun? Isn't this more fun than having to listen to a long, boring speech? And everybody went, yeah! I thought, oh, we're doomed, man.
We're doomed.
It was the long, boring speech we used to vote for.
Personally,
Hey, I'm not a political guy, man, and I'm in a quandary. I'm not in a quandary about who not to vote for.
Yeah. That's true.
I'm a quandary about who to vote for, because I always vote, you know, in absentia. I live here, but I'm still an American citizen. And, right. You know, and I don't ever get too political, but, I mean, you'd have to be, you know, you'd have to be just really
a bad person,
not paying any attention to see how unbelievably silly it all is, or not silly, actually very, very serious. But, you know, it's that entertainment factor, man. It's the way everything is gone. It's, you know, the music business was competitive, and out of that competition, you got, I got the Beatles, yeah, well, I got the Stones, and it got bigger and it got broader because everybody was competing in a good way. And now you got gladiator arenas on the weekends on television, and you pit singers against each other. And I don't mind the talent shows so much, because I'd like to be able to go, well, you know, I like the dog act better than the magician. You know what I mean? But when it's a bunch of young singers that they say, look, make believe you like each other, we're going to treat you like an absolute star for 14 weeks, and then you're on your own.
Sleeping lady. Some of the strangest things that you've ever seen. I could never tell you the things that I do in my head, leaving nothing unsaid. Sleeping late in my bed. I'm embarrassed by devious thoughts. When I'm undercover, let me never get caught. Crazy notions begin with that old devil grin on my face. We're such a disgrace. Me and my pillowcase. Sleeping late has been known to compensate and sometimes even stimulate. I, for one, appreciate sleeping late. Ain't it great sleeping late? Ones on reruns, if you know what I mean. I don't believe I can wait for that clock to stop ringing in my ear. It's so lovely here. I may sleep for a year.
You know, reality TV started when police helicopters went, wow, we can show this stuff. It really did, and because we paid for it already, you know, and that's how that goes. But man, you know, and when I say this stuff about the X Factor and about blah blah blah, man, I understand that, you know, you stand in one place and stuff just changes around you, so you might as well recognize it. I'm not jumping on any of it, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I don't, you know, first of all, when I was younger, right after Hook, there were things I wanted to do. There were things I didn't want to just jump onto another bus and go out there and be, hey, I'm the lead singer of Dr. Hook, and now I'll sing some Hook songs, but I got this. I needed to give it a break. My son came to live with me. I needed it to be a different life, you know. But I rolled on with it, I rolled on with it, and you just, that's all you can do. And now I try to roll on with it some more. You know what I mean? Because I can't be part of it, because it would be, you know, it's like the guy with the haircut, and you go, really? Really? That, don't you really, you, that you think, doesn't that, where'd you get that haircut from, your kid? I mean, you know, and I got opinions, but nobody's gonna, you know, the reason I feel okay, you know, voicing my opinions is because nobody cares.
People, you know what you should do?
What they're gonna do, you know?
You know what you should do? You should do something like Celebrity Big Brother. You go in there and then you get all the time in the world to say what you want, or The Jungle, the other one.
Not but me, that, pal. I get it. I have to tell you something, man. This is, you know, this is what I almost started to say a minute or so ago. Right after Hook, there were things, and people would make suggestions like, you ought to do this, and you ought to do that. And I used to think, it doesn't feel like me. And I don't mean things are beneath me. I'm not even talking above or beneath. I'm just talking about, if something doesn't feel like me, it's the way I buy clothes. I buy clothes that look like I've already had them. I don't want anything to feel brand spanking new. I want it to feel organic and stuff. So if stuff didn't feel good to me, the promise of money didn't really matter. I just want, you know, I've been out there with the Hook thing on the road 300 days a year. I wanted my life to start making sense. It hasn't, by the way. Just, I'll give you the punchline. It hasn't, but, you know, you never stop looking. But I just kept, you know, I just rolled on with that, and then I would say, oh, they want me to do that? I don't want to do that. Because everybody's idea for me, believe it or not, I lived in Nashville, and I was writing songs, and I liked Nashville, but everybody went, why don't you just do country records? And I thought, well, I could do some country records, but I don't think I'm going to put the hat on, you know, and just go, yeah. So I just kind of, and then as I got older, I realized that nobody's asking me to do anything. So that thing about, well, how dare they think I would do that? Because now it was like, no, nobody cares. No, nobody's asking you. I got a 25-year-old guy who would kill to do that.
Right.
So you can shut up now. And life just changes, man. Life just changes, you know. And it's what I said to you earlier on. I'm not in competition with myself anymore, you know, because I did some acting. I did some writing for other people. I put out a book of poetry, solo albums. I've done other things, you know, that, not to compete with Hook, but just that make me feel well-rounded. Because I joined Hook when I was 18 years old, and the farewell tour was when I was 35. And there's not been a day that I haven't been reminded that I was in Dr. Hook. Not a day. I mean, I might not be actively going out there and doing this stuff, but I get emails all, you know. Or well, I said on Twitter the other day, I feel a little weird when somebody compliments me on something from on YouTube, because I feel like I'm saying thank you and trying to make believe, yeah, because, you know, I am still 25, you know.
Now, you said you were 18 when you joined Dr. Hook, and that was, so that's, next year will be your 50th anniversary then.
2019 is, we got together in 69. So
right.
I would have been just, not quite 20, because it was the beginning of the year, my birthday's in June. So I would have been, yeah, I would have, because I remember having a bowl of soup during one of our 15-minute breaks and watching them walk on the moon.
Wow.
Watch it on a black and white TV. Whether they actually did or not, I'm not here to say. But I have no idea. Was I there? No. I know I heard all about the footprints and the flags blowing the wrong way, but that wasn't my point.
Yeah.
We watched them walk on the moon, or make believe they were walking on the moon, on a black and white television, and then we went back to the bar, and we had to play 6 45-minute sets a night. And the bartender didn't really care what we played, as long as we were on stage. And people would always make requests and threaten to kill us if we didn't play certain things, and we would fake our way through. But when we went back, we were so inspired by that bowl of soup and the black and white TV that we said, we're going to play a tribute to the moon. And we played some ridiculous psychedelic thing for the entire 45 minutes that we couldn't have recreated with all the mind-altering drugs on the planet, you know. We just jammed through it. And the funny thing about it is we got requests for that for weeks. Hey, do that tribute to the moon. I said, we had no idea what we'd done. But so I know, and I just documented it with a weird story, that it was 1969. So in 2019, it'll be 50 years. And you want to know something? I will have done it. I will be 70 that year. And I will have done Hook for 50 of it.
That's so awesome.
So when somebody goes, so I don't know, have you, you know, and that's the thing too, man. People say to me, well, you know, he walked away from it. He just doesn't respect what he has. He has no reverence for it. And it's, yeah, I do have reverence for it. That's why I just didn't keep pissing on it. You know what I mean? I didn't want to go sing Sylvia's Mother in a Chicken in a Basket place. I wanted to leave it alone and let it be special. You know, and that's not me playing hard to get. Nobody cares.
It's your legacy.
What do you think if I disappear, anybody's going to come looking for me?
It's your legacy. You've got to protect your legacy. And you
don't
want to be standing there.
I'll tell you what I did. I did all the business stuff, and I paid all the taxes on the trademark name. Right. And whenever a record label wanted to put out a box set, I would get involved and do liner notes and give it a personal touch so that there wasn't just, you know, because there's so many, every time they find a new old picture of the band, another compilation comes out, and I look at the tracks, and the version of the band that's on the cover is not even the ones that played on the, and so I've always tried to keep my hand in, and if the record label said, would you assist, or I'd even volunteer, you know, reissues came out, and I went in, and I did liner notes that I thought helped give it an historic thing rather than just another knockoff album. And that's what I did when I wasn't actively out, you know, singing the hits and being the guy from Dr. Hook. I've always been the guy from Dr. Hook. Man, you know, Dr. Hook was a little bar band, but it became Dr. Hook Incorporated, okay? Yeah. And there's lawyers involved, and there's accountants involved, and there's stuff you need to do. I mean, there's a whole thing where people think that Ray Sawyer and I, the fellow with the eye patch, for anybody who doesn't know, that we had some big argument between us, and it had nothing to do with us. It was who was going to use the name and how they were going to use it, and the people who were arguing were attorneys. And the longer they argue, they walk away whistling, man. Mm-hmm. You know? So, but that's what it was. I have always kept my eye on the Hook thing. I never just woke up one day and went, oh, whatever happened to that Dr. Hook thing? You know, my company owns the name, because I thought if we all just walked away from it, because we did, man. We did that farewell tour when it was over, after being on the road for 300 days a year, we all ran away from that thing like it was a burning vehicle, you know. Mm. And months later, I thought, well, it's a trademark name. It's a business, you know. And so I've taken care of it. And, you know, people can go, well, you weren't the only original member. No, I wasn't. But I took care of this thing in a lot of ways. And, you know, if you leave your baby on my doorstep and I raise it, don't be pissed off at me if it calls me daddy.
Absolutely. I would agree with you.
Hey, before we got to let you know, Dennis, I just got a text from a friend of mine. He owns the All-Star Rock Bar here in Kansas City, in which we would like you to play If and When America Ever Makes Sense.
Okay, well, there's one.
There you go. We'll try and line up some more.
King the map and work out from there.
here's what he said. He says, they played Woody's at 64th and 29 back in the day. Was the best up-close personal show he's ever been to. It was awesome.
Great, cool, great. You know, we were personable, man. We were, you know, and it started because we were that bar band, you know, and people would come up and say, you know, any country music? I mean, one night the police chief came in with a whole bunch of cops. They'd been at a party, and they came in, and they were all drunk, you know, continuing the party afterwards, and the police, captain of the police came up, and he said, can you play any Hawaiian music? My wife wants to do the hula. And so we thought, well, are you gonna tell the police chief no? So we said, okay, yes, we can. And George Cummings had a little lap steel guitar, and you know, he gave us a signal, and we went into a you know, something, and she did the hula, and everybody was happy. And the police chief was happy, and then they were all so pissed, and as they were leaving, the police chief came over to me and slipped a $5 bill in my hand and said, "Here, kid, that was great. Buy yourself some dope." And I probably did. I mean, for $5, you could probably get, you know, a whole lot. So, but no, I don't know, man.
That was at least half a lid back then, wasn't it?
Oh, I remember when it went up to 7, I thought, well, that's the end of that. You know, but no, man, you know, it's just, you know, it's time in general, man. You know, sometimes things look like they are so far away, and sometimes, you know, I refer to everything as a few years ago, and then I realize I'm talking about 20. Because that's, you know, as you get older, and I guess neither of you guys are as old as me. And, you know, the funny thing was I was in Dr. Hook, man. I was the youngest guy in the band. I can't find people older than me now. You know what I mean? Everybody in the band is younger than me, which I guess is good. And the audiences are not only people that used to come to see Hook, but their children. And if the stars are right, they're children's children, which is really good, because it means if I could just keep breathing in and out, my audience isn't going to die.
Exactly. I was talking with Ross about this before we got you on the line, and he mentioned that he thought that, you know, we would play some Dr. Hook, some Dennis LeCourie. We'll mix it up a little bit today. And I'm like, well, everybody that I know knows at least one Dr. Hook song, and that goes from everybody that's older than me all the way down to my friend's kids who still love Cover the Rolling Stone.
Man, I'm telling you what, you know, I've said this before too, but it really resonates with me, because I always used to be perplexed when I tried to walk away from the Hook thing, and I thought for healthy reasons I was just going to leave it alone. And because, like I said to you earlier, I didn't want to grow to hate it, you know. And I just thought, well, you know, if I leave it there, you know, people aren't going to come look. Like I said, they're not going to come looking for me. They can get on fine without me, you know what I mean? And I can and I can just walk away and take another look at this. But sometimes you really do need to step away from something to find out how close you are to it, you know. And people will talk to me. It always used to confuse me why people daily used to talk to me about Dr. Hook as if it was an ongoing concern, when to me it was something I used to do, not on like all the levels I told you about, but at the performing level, you know. And I thought, well, I don't understand that. But once I started dealing with the catalog and doing the albums and promoting them and doing the tours with the Hook name, and people talk to me about it, man, it's some of the loveliest stuff in the world. You know, people tell me about, you know, they used to go camping and with their family and sing Dr. Hook songs, and, you know, their dad's since passed away, but they're all coming to the show. And, you know, no matter what kind of day you're having, what kind of asshole would you have to be to go, "Would you leave me alone, please?" You know what I mean? That's some heavy, weighty stuff, because I'm just a schmuck from New Jersey, man, playing bars. And if I've made any difference to anybody, and I know this sounds cloying and, you know, overly poetic, but it's really true. It's not what I was trying to do. I always say to people, they say, "Oh, you know, I had your record and it really got me through a bad time." And I always say, "I'm glad, because when I was in the studio, I was just trying to sing in the right key." I wasn't, you know what I mean? It's not as noble as you think. I'm not, you know, I'm not Celine Dion. I don't think that every time I hit a high note, somebody's tumor gets reduced, you know? I'm just trying to do a good job. And if it's helped somebody through a bad time, oh my goodness. You know, isn't that great that I set a little fire and it kept a couple of other people warm? But it's never, you know, your intention. I don't know who goes into it. Even doctors, they don't go into it thinking, "Think of all the people I'm going to save." They go into it thinking, "Christ, I hope I don't kill anybody."
we've got a question in from Twitter from the Netherlands, from Henny. Who's listening?
I know Henny and his wife Marianelle. Yeah, nice people. What does he want? What do you want, Henny? What does he want? I thought he knew everything about me.
He wants to know, when you're on tour, what do you miss the most?
Well, when I was younger, when I went on the road with Dr. Hook and we were out there all around the world 300 days a year, everything I owned was in my shoulder bag. You know what I mean? So I didn't miss anything. Now I try to think, you know, what 20 books should I bring? I mean, I want, you know, they say, I heard when I was younger, that they say, you know, as you get older, your comfort zone gets smaller. And I know that's true now because I'm standing like a flamingo on one leg in my own comfort zone trying to keep out of my own way. You have to pare it down. You have to pare it down, you know. I never really understood the bands that need every dressing room to look like where they live. Just do the gig and go home, you know. It comforts a home. I mean, that's the thing about being on the road, man, is you better be secure within yourself because everything else is a variable. You know, what time you'll eat, if you're going to eat, because I don't eat after a certain, I won't eat like after 3:30 in the afternoon when I have a show. It just, I ate Thanksgiving dinner once 25 years ago at somebody's house and wanted to die for the whole show, and so it put the fear in me, and so I don't eat. But when you're on the road, Ben, everything is a variable. Every single thing is a variable, and the only thing you could actually control and kind of keep consistent is yourself.
Right.
You know what happens in a hotel? We check in, and you say, so what time, is there anything to eat? And they say, no, restaurant just closed. And I say, okay, well, what time does it open? And they may as well say to me, well, what time are you leaving? Because we'll wait, and then we'll open it right after you leave. You know, just call down and tell us you'll be leaving in 15 minutes, and I swear to God, when you walk by, all the lights will be off, you know. So, but that's, and if that's the stuff that's going to bring you down, you know, so it's not, that's not the stuff I don't miss, but that's the stuff you gear up to do. You know, you gear up to go out there and go, okay, you know, everything is going to be different every day. You try to make it as consistent. I got a great production team, and, you know, I'm not saying that like it's all haphazard. It's nailed down, but no matter what you nail down, there's always variables, but, you know, you just sail through, and the only thing that has to be consistent, the only thing that cannot be a variable is the show you do.
Right.
You know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, lights up, boom, nobody cares. Nobody cares about your day. You know, I learned very early on that you can't really go on television and radio and bitch to people about your life because they go, you live in a hotel. I wish I could get room service. Somebody else making my bed, because from the outside, you're living a life that without any detail looks great. And man, it ain't bad. You know, let me call it where it is. I could think of a whole long list of things I would rather not be doing. So, but, you know, you can't complain to people. You can't be on television going, oh, what a dreadful life. People,
yeah.
You just shut up and you do your gig. And I got to tell you, too, man, once you go on stage, very, very, very rarely, as a matter of fact, I couldn't even give you an example right now, but I could feel like absolute death, and I don't even mean ill, I just mean I would rather be anywhere but going on stage and being Mr. Personality. And I'm telling you what, when you go out there and the audience goes, hey man, how are you? It changes your mind for a couple of hours, no matter how you feel. So it has a built-in kind of catalyst. And it's the people. I never understand the bands that go out there and don't really acknowledge people. You know what I mean? It's just like an oil painting and we're just doing the show. Because, man, without that exact audience, and I mean that exact audience every night, you know, I don't ever go out and say, they loved me last night, this is going to be a breeze. I go out square one, like I said about the doctor, just hoping I don't kill anybody.
Yeah, they say that, you know, you treat every gig like it's your first ever gig, and you won't go wrong. And
No, man,
you know,
and the day I lose my absolute enthusiasm for it, and, you know, as you get older, you think, really, you know, because, you know, when you go to Australia and you do really well, the promoter will say to you, hey, see you in 2 years. We'll give it 24 months, and you come back. And, you know, when you're 35, that sounds like a good deal. when you're 66 and the promoter says, see you in 2 years, you shake his hand thinking, will you? And I don't mean that fatalistically, because yes, I know you can be 20 years old and get hit with a diaper service truck. I get it. You can go in any moment, but as you get older and the inevitability factor sets in, you go, yeah, like I just said to you, wow, 50th anniversary. I have to be 70 to get there. So there's a little good news and bad news there, you know what I mean? It's not like you go, wow, you know, okay, I'm going to do that 50th anniversary tour when I'm 40 again, you know? So it is what it is, man. It is what it is. And I think about it all the time, and probably a little bit too much, but from every indication, there's a whole lot of people not thinking about anything. So, you know.
Well, you know, I have to say something. I once saw Billy Connolly doing a stand-up gig, and although he's Scottish and I'm Scottish, I had never seen him live before. And I remember he came on stage, and for the first 15 or 20 minutes, I can't remember a single word he said, because myself and probably the whole audience you sort of look at somebody like that in awe. You just kind of stare at them with your mouth open, and you're thinking, that's Billy Connolly up there.
Yeah,
and
I'm here. Oh, yeah.
And that's what it was like. I think that's what it's like when you're on stage. People just looking at each other and saying, that's Dennis. That's great, man.
It's great, because I don't take it for granted, and you know, but I know what you mean. I mean, you know, you go to see Bob Dylan, and you go to see McCartney, and you know, and believe me, I'm not lining myself up with Bob Dylan and McCartney. I'm just talking about, for me, I feel like that when I'm standing there and I'm going, that's Paul McCartney. I mean, that's, you know, that's, and there's, you know, there are a whole lot of people now, you know, of a certain age, that we're not going to see their like again. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's going to have heroes. Everybody's going to have their favorite music. Right now, there's somebody 15 listening to music that makes no sense to me. Not no sense, I'm not an idiot, but just isn't speaking to me, but has them in tears or has them elated. And when they're 30 years old and that piece of music comes on the radio, their eyes are going to well up, because it's going to remind them of when they were 15.
That's right.
And for me to be in a position where people do that, you know, because I don't want to just be a relic. I don't really just want to be, you know, because it gets really weird when the only flattery you ever get is about who you used to be, because it's like going up to an older, attractive person and going, hey, I bet you used to be beautiful. You know, but I get it. I get it. It's a thing. It's a thing. I understand that it's that thing that you don't even want to acknowledge because it's so worn out, but it's that soundtrack of your life. And if I'm part of that for somebody, you know, it may not be the only thing I wanted to do. I may not think that I'm over. I may not realize any more of anything I want to do. But, you know, you can't take something like Hook and then go, yeah, well, that was good, but if I could just... Because, yeah, you have other aspirations, but, you know, if that's all I did that resonated with that many people, then you know, that's not a small thing, I guess.
Well,
but you gotta live it, man. You know, people, you said it. You used the word, not me. You used the word legendary, and I gotta tell you, the only thing wrong with it is you gotta live a certain amount of years to be that. You know what I mean? It's like calling the album timeless, the Hook album timeless. I said, why don't we just call it timeless? It's not, you know, it's a simple title, but it takes 100 years for you to be timeless. I mean, nobody calls their first album timeless.
You're right. You know? Well, I know what you mean, but I mean, anybody that's, when everybody in the world has heard your voice, that makes you a legend in my eyes, that's for sure.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to say, Ross. You're 3 years away from celebrating 50 years of Dr. Hook, and you were 20 when you started. Are you kidding me? That's legendary.
You know, I know. Yeah, man, but if you can't, you don't sit anywhere. When the Hook broke up, and you know, I disbanded the group after the farewell tour, and I was 35 years old. I'm, you know, I just, I didn't know what I wanted to do next, because everything I had done was focused on Hook. I mean, I had a family and a son, but I was on the road 280, 300 days a year. So you can see how little I focused on family life. And families didn't travel with us, because we had seven guys in the band. If all of our families would have come, you know, now it's twice as expensive. We got to hope all the wives like each other. Please, just shoot me, okay? I mean, it would have been impossible. Hook would not have lasted 15 years if we were bringing, you know, because then that might be my wife, but the bass player has a new girlfriend, and she's just as important to him, and nobody knows her, and now she's too. Right. The politics are a joke, yeah. You know. They just are a joke. But you know, the band was Hook. The original band, man, were a bunch of good guys. We didn't have a lot in common outside of Hook. Everybody was into different things. Jance was into motorcycles. Rick wanted to go hang gliding, you know, jump off cliffs with a sheet on his back, and we used to have to say to Rick and Jance, look, we have 2 weeks off. Try not to kill yourselves on your hang gliders or motorcycles, because we're booked, you know. Everybody had different interests. Ray liked to go fishing. I liked to go to New York and go to bookstores. I mean, it's probably what made Hook interesting when we came together. You said it, Russ. You said it earlier that it was theatrical. It was just everybody being who they were. And it was organic, and it doesn't happen again. And, you know, so for me to go, yeah, here's a guy that looks a lot like Billy, I mean, it's just bullshit. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Because really now, quite honestly, I would say, I'm not going to even give it a percentage, but a good percentage of the audience, of the people who come to see me play now with the band, are, you know, they don't remember what we looked like. Nor do they care. It's on downloads. It's, you know what I mean? It's not like they're not going, where's the guy with the long mustache? I mean, it's not, I'm not denigrating anybody's memory. I'm just saying that a good part of our audience now wants to hear the music that they remembered.
The UK tour starts at the end of September. A lot of the gigs are already sold out, but if you go onto Dennis's website, dennislecorrier.com, you can find all the gig dates there, all the places.
Also, if I can just mention, because it's a brand new website, you can also go to drhookofficial.com.
Right.
And if you go to Dr. Hook Official, I mean, you can always go to mine, DennisLaCoria.com, but Dr. Hook Official, now that we're on the road and it's a new website, we're going to start loading that up with lots of photos from the tour and fan photos and little videos that nice. We take backstage and stuff. So Dr. Hook Official would be a good, you know, a good place. And then, you know, like I said, I've been dragged kicking and screaming onto Twitter. I kind of liked it, I have to say it briefly. Because as you can tell by this interview that was supposed to be 30 minutes a half hour ago, I don't know how I go. But I am going to go, because I am supposed to be, you know, I think there is dinner getting cold somewhere. But I really appreciate it, man. I like talking to you guys, because I don't, you know, I just ramble on. But, you know, anyway.
Oh, we love listening. Cool. We love listening to your stories. We never get fed up for a second. We could listen to you all day, as was evident in the last four-hour interview. In fact, we did two four-hour interviews.
See, Springsteen does four-hour shows. I do four-hour interviews. Oh, my God. What do people go to sleep, they fall asleep, and they wake up the next morning, and I'm still talking, and they must think they're in hell. So, you know. Anyway, man, thank you, guys. It's really cool. And you know, I like talking to you guys. And maybe somewhere in the middle of it, if you want, I'll check back in with you.
Absolutely.
Oh, without
and
a doubt.
You can hear the toll that it's taking on me. And I'm sure people will have by now emailed you or Twittered and said, you know, that LaCoria guy, I went to see him. What's up with this idiot? You know, I mean, there'll be a lot more feedback in the middle of the tour, because right now, it all looks like it's going to go great.
Yeah, well, I've got a big fan of yours in Scotland. Would you say a big hello to Michael McFarlane in the Tamla Hill?
Yeah, Michael McFarlane, Tamara Hill. How you doing, pal? Are you going, or are we just saying hello to each other like ships are passing the night? I hope you're going to the show. Scotland's great, man. I always say about Scotland that, you know, the people up there are so demonstrative that, like, you know, they could, if they don't like you, obviously, they're not taking any shit. And if they don't like you, they'll kill you. But sometimes if they do like you, they'll kill you by accident just trying to hug you. You know, so you can never be totally safe. But I love it, man. I mean, I love the Apollo. You know, we did my last DVD there. Sorry. The Royal Concert Hall in Glasgow. But when I think of Glasgow, I think of the Apollo. You know, I wonder where that ghost went. You know, it had to go somewhere. The Apollo ghost. Well, but no, we did the Glasgow. You know, my last DVD. Because you just want, you just, if you're going to do a DVD, man, do it in front of an audience that other people are envious of, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, absolutely.
What, and Liverpool, another audience like that, I have to say, has been always great to me. I really, I know it's, you know, again, worn out phrase, but when I go back to these places, the way people treat me, I really do feel like I'm going back to some place familiar to me, which is nice when you've traveled around the world, that you get somewhere and, you know. Because a lot of it's just a stop, so. Well, listen, man, I keep telling you I'm going to go, and I really am, or people are not going to believe me when I say I'll be at the show. But thank you, guys. If you
Dennis,
want to, get in touch on Twitter, and if you want to, we'll talk again, like, somewhere in the middle of November, and we'll see how we feel.
Perfect.
And Ross, I guess I'll see you in Glasgow with all your 50 people, because we have to take a picture of me holding the bus up or something. I don't know.
Absolutely. We'll see you in October.
Okay, and, man. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll see you
Thanks,
soon.
Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. See
you, Dennis.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Have a great tour. Bye now. Dennis LeCorrier on the show there live with us. Always a great guest, Dennis.
Wow, he is so full of energy. I love that guy.
Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
It's probably one of your all-time favorite television series. And this December, it's your chance to meet the actors who portrayed some of World War II's most well-known paratroopers. Join the actors from television's Band of Brothers series this December in Bastogne, Belgium, as they gather to honor the veterans of the Battle of the Bulge and in support of the nonprofit World War II Foundation. For the past 2 years, the actors have reunited in Normandy, France, and thousands of people have had the opportunity to meet them. Now, for the first time, the actors are visiting another of the most historic locations of World War II, where the 101st Airborne Division held off German counterattack after counterattack during some of the most extreme weather conditions witnessed in the entire war. We hope you join us in Bastogne for 3 days of amazing events with the Band of Brothers actors and veterans. Please visit www.wwiifoundation.org and click on our events link to order your tickets. The actors will see you in Bastogne, Belgium, December 9th through the 11th.
Hi. I'm Paul Woodedge, D-Day historian, a battlefield tour guide in Normandy, France. I offer tours of the D-Day landing beaches of 1944, along with my partner Magali. If you would like to find out more, see my website at www.ddayhistorian.com and my partner Magali's at www.ddayforyou.com. I am proud to be supporting the Ross Owen Show.
Black Sky Radio.